Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We dug into the ground and we started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns with the Rivertown Kids on their Grammy Award-winning album, Tomorrow's Children. This is Harvey Wasserman. I'm with you for another hour here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show here at PRN-FM. It's wonderful to be with you again, and we have a great show for you. We're going to be joined once again by my co-conspirator, Bob Fitricus, co-author with me of Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? We have a piece posted both at freepress.org and at commondreams.org on voting machines in Cincinnati owned by the buddies of Mitt Romney. The question, we must ask the question, will e-voting machines owned by his buddies put Mitt Romney in the White House? Bob, what do you think? Bob Fitricus, are you there yet? All right, Bob hasn't called in yet. We're going to be joined by Sherry Hakala. Sherry, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. Let me make sure I got your last name pronounced correctly. Give it to us, please.
It's Sherry Hakala.
All right, I got it right. What do you know?
So, yeah.
Sherry, you and I met Saturday night here in Columbus, Ohio at the Free Press House at a great salon, Saturday Night Salon. And you are the vice presidential candidate of the United States candidate for the vice president of the United States, let's put it that way, for the Green Party. Are you running?
Yes,
Jill
I
Stein?
Am.
Jill Stein, who was our guest last week. It's an honor to have you on the show. It was a pleasure to meet you Saturday night. And I admire your tenacity and your strength and your commitment for continuing a campaign like this. Now, you are in New York City, is that correct?
Yes, I'm in New York City, just arrived this morning. Have been in West Virginia for the last couple days, and I'm looking forward to linking up with folks here in the Big Apple.
Good, good, good. Now, you have an event tonight with Jill Stein. Can you tell us about it? Jill Stein was our guest last week, as I said, and she is the Green Party candidate for president of the United States.
Yes, there's going to be some live music. There's a rapper. I don't know the rapper's name, and also an award-winning comedian. They'll both be there tonight. Jill and I will both be there. And we're looking forward to listening to some good comedy and some good music, and at the same time talking about the serious issues that are facing us in our country.
All right. So, and where is this event? What time?
It's at 7 o'clock. I don't have the details before me, but people can go on to the Jill Stein for President website and find out where in Manhattan the event is taking.
It's actually at Sullivan Hall, wherever that is.
I'm glad you know where that is.
Yeah. It's at 7 o'clock at Sullivan Hall, if anybody from New York City is listening in. You're going to be with Sherry Hakala, and Jill Stein will be there. Any other Green Party candidates?
There's some local folks that are running here in New York. I'm not sure who will be joining us, but any of the candidates that are running on the Green Party ticket will be sure and uplift their candidacies as well.
Very good, very good. Bob Fitricus, have you joined us yet? Still not with us. Okay. So, Sherry, tell us about yourself. I talked to you for a while Saturday night about your personal history and how you became the Green Party vice presidential candidate. Can you give us some of your background, especially start with your activism and your astonishing scorecard of 200 arrests? How did a woman like you, very innocent, you know, shy, charming young woman, wind up getting arrested 200 times?
Well, my journey began many years ago when I found myself homeless with my little boy at the time. His name was Mark. And I had gotten laid off from my job. I had lived in my car. My car was totaled by a drunk driver one night, and I lost my home, the car. So myself and my son Mark, we couldn't get into any of the city shelters. So I had heard about this phenomenon happening in the north, where people were beginning to move themselves into abandoned, federally owned government properties because they keep them heated in the wintertime so that the pipes don't freeze. So on a cold winter night, I decided that I deserved to live, and I wasn't going to freeze to death with my son. And so I broke the law and moved myself and my son into the property. And I began the process of going to jail upwards of, you know, two or three times on a daily basis.
On a daily basis?
Yeah.
How did that happen? How do you get arrested two or three times a day?
Well, back in the day, they used to just issue citations. So the police department would come out and, you know, make you leave the house, and then they'd kind of like write you a ticket. But then they'd come back again. If you were still in there, then they'd take you down to the station and book you and keep you in the holding cell for about 8 hours and then let you out. And I didn't have a place to go. And more importantly, I was trying to raise this issue that, you know, we live in a wealthy country. I had, you know, the few dollars that I had, put them into an escrow account, and I would have moved into whatever affordable housing would have been available or whatever kind of shelter. But that the Twin Cities and our elected officials weren't going to get away with just letting me, you know, freeze to death on the streets when there's more abandoned properties than there are homeless people.
Wow. So how long did this go on with you and your young son?
In that particular period, for about 9 months, but through that process, people began to learn about my activism from around the country.
Why
and
that?
Around
how did,
the city.
How did you get to be so well known?
Because the word really spreads, especially when you live in a very cold climate with lots of snow, and you had, you know, hundreds of other people that were worried about freezing to death themselves. And so they had heard about this phenomenon taking place. They heard about Sherry Honkala, and they began to come over, and I began to form an organization. And, you know,
well,
first
now what did you call your organization?
At that time, we called it Up and Out of Poverty Now. But then it later blossomed into the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, and from the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, it's now the National Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. And most of your listeners would be familiar with the people who have been setting up tent cities across the country, and also, you know, teaching people how to do home foreclosure defense, and teaching people across the country how to do housing takeovers when victims of domestic violence or homeless families can't get into any kind of shelter.
Now give us a website on that.
It's economichumanrights.org, and that's for the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. And people can also, if they look on the front page of the Jill Stein for President website, and they bring up the vice presidential bio on myself, there's about six or seven different documentaries that have been done over the years, and a catalog of other kinds of resources that people are doing organizing around economic justice issues can use.
Cool. Okay, I'm calling it up right now. We'll take a look here. Jill Stein for president. I am probably the first guy in my town to put up a yard sign for you and for Bob Fetrakis. Bob, are you on with us yet? Bob Fetrakis, not there yet. Okay, so Sherry, I'm going to click on your picture here at Jill Stein for president. And you were born in poverty in Minneapolis. Tell us about that.
Well, I come from a mother that was poor, and she had five children. And back during the time that I was growing up, they didn't have battered women's shelters. So she was classified as unfit. And I was actually raised in nine different institutions before I was the age of 16. And my mother today has really healed through the work that I do, because my whole life has been about how do I keep families together. And actually, since I've been on my run for vice president, I've received two phone calls from the Department of Human Services Child Protection in Philadelphia. One is because a mother with five kids was going to have their kids taken because she had her water shut off in her house. And the other, a woman was going to have her kids taken because the city declared her house that she was living in as unfit. So instead of the city helping a woman figure out how to help with their water or get them into better affordable housing in the Philadelphia area, our country is in the business of fast-tracking people first into foster home and then into adoption. And it's really a shame, especially when we have, you know, plenty of houses that can be fixed up and allow families to be able to raise their children.
Wow. Well, looking here, we have Bob on the line. Bob Fetrakis, you with us?
I'm here, Harvey.
Okay, Bob Fetrakis, candidate for Congress for the Green Party in Central Ohio. My co-conspirator at freepress.org. We have written together five books on election theft. The latest is Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? Bob, I'm talking with Sherry Honkla, who is in your home Saturday night. She has an astonishing life story. I urge everyone listening to go to jillsteinforpresident.org. Is that what it is? jillstein.org.
Yeah.
And look at Sherry Honkla. That's Sherry Honkla, the vice presidential candidate, candidate for vice president of the United States on the Green Party ticket. Now, you said that your mother has been rehabilitated. Can you tell us about that?
Well, my mother, she never needed any rehabilitation. She was just a victim of domestic violence, and during that period in history, they didn't have battered women's shelters to go with the kids. And so what they did is they just, you know, separated the kids from the mother. So instead of, you know, putting us all together in a battered women's shelter, I was in nine different institutions, including foster homes and reformatories.
On your own, without your sibling.
Yeah, without my other brothers and sisters. And I spent most of my time in those different, girls' jails, actually organizing and, scaling fences. And I'd meet my, sisters and my brother, and, we'd all get together for a few minutes. And then the police would come, and then we'd all have to go back to the various different institutions we were at.
Wow. Now, unlike, I have to ask you a question. Since you are a candidate for national office, in this case vice president, are you, like all the other major party candidates, a millionaire?
No, I hate to break it to you.
Bob, since you're running for Congress, I assume you're a millionaire.
Well, I live in a house that used to belong to a millionaire, but they're surprisingly affordable now that they've tanked our entire economy.
Right. I mean, Sherry, if you really want to own a house, why don't you just go up to Detroit?
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, I'm headed to Detroit at the end of the month.
Get a house while you're there, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, I could actually, at this point, pick a house any place in the country. And some, you know, like Bob was saying, there's some pretty nice ones and large ones that are, you know, just sitting there abandoned. There's tons of abandoned luxury units as well in Memphis. So I could just, you know, pick a house pretty much any place else in the country.
Well, now you say you were employed at one point and you lost your job. What was your employment?
Well, actually, I've been employed my whole life.
Uh-huh.
You know, anywhere from bartending to teaching to working with juveniles in the juvenile justice system. There's no money in organizing, so, you know, you always have to have some kind of paid gig somewhere.
Oh, I don't know. Barack Obama seems to have done pretty well.
In order to eat.
Barack Obama seems to have done pretty well as an organizer, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, yeah. We have different funders, let's just say.
Right. Of course, brings to mind the great quote, I think it was A.J. Musty who said that, one thing about being a community organizer, the pay's no good, but the work is steady. So
That's correct.
So now, how is it, Bob, were you at the Green Party convention when Sherry was given the vice presidential nomination?
No, unfortunately, I wasn't. I was in the middle of some legal work down here, which actually involved the Green Party.
So Sherry, you were at a Green Party convention with 1,000 people. And they chose you to be the vice presidential candidate, and I assume you gave an acceptance speech. So what are your promises when you become vice president of the United States to work with Joe Stein to do? What is your agenda here?
Well, we're hoping to put forward the Green New Deal, and in the Green New Deal, people can read all about that on the Jill Stein website. But we're promising to take the unemployment centers and turn those into employment centers. That would entail guaranteeing everyone a living wage job. It would be similar to the public works programs during the Great Depression, where people would get a check to help work on the bridges or the roads or, any of those kinds of things, and we would pay for it by bringing the military home and spending all of those trillions of dollars on rebuilding America. We would also guarantee...
Are you suggesting that we end the empire?
I'm suggesting that it's time. It's well overdue. And it's killing all of us, and we've got to bury something that's been killing us. So,
Bob, as a candidate,
time to get rid of the empire.
Get rid of the empire. Bob Fitrakis is a candidate for Congress here from the Green Party in Central Ohio. What are you saying about the empire?
Well, the same thing we said back in the 60s and 70s. You can't be both a democracy and an empire. The corruption of the empire, comes home and takes away our civil rights, our human rights, and our civil liberties. So if we want to remain a democracy, you have to drive a stake through the heart of the empire.
And
we
can. Do we really think the empire has a heart to drive a stake through? That's the problem we have with the nuclear power industry.
A heart, but it's mainly black from that coal dust and that oil they fight for.
All right, we got that one, Bob. You'll be glad to know. By the way, I did get my yard sign, your yard sign, up on my yard here. So, both Sherry and Bob Fitrakis are gracing my front yard. We are talking with Sherry Honkola. She is the vice presidential candidate for vice president of the United States on the Green Party ticket, and Bob Fitrakis, the candidate for Congress on the Green Party ticket from Central Ohio. Sherry, I interrupted you. You were running through the list of of things that the Green Party intends to do once it wins this election. We started with, of course, the ending of the empire. Let's continue. What else you got for us?
We're going to guarantee a right to education from, you know, preschool to college. We're also going to make sure that everybody has health care, I mentioned. We're also going to make sure that we break up the big banks and that we have local community-controlled banks. And we're going to green the economy by making sure that we take folks and have them sustain in participate in organic farming, in solar, in putting different researchers together to come up with the best methods of making sure that we're creating green, just, sustainable jobs for everybody in our country.
Well, tell us a bit more, you and Bob jump in if you like, about this, the Green New Deal that Jill Stein introduced on our show last week and that you and Bob are talking about in the Green Party campaign.
Well, we're also going to, protect our civil liberties, and we're going to get rid of the Patriot Act. Myself being somebody that has done organizing for 25 years and has constantly had to deal with unlawful arrests, and have had to deal with living in a state that, has spied and participated in violating my First Amendment rights and my rights to privacy, and has, almost had me, sent away from anywhere upwards of like 22 years at any given point just for talking about poverty and homelessness in this country. We know that the billions of dollars that have been spent on the auspices of, keeping us safe from outside terrorists has really been used to prevent the civil liberties of people here in this country. And, it's time for that to end. It's time for people to be able to go back to the days when they can petition their government and march in the street. I've organized the largest marches on opening day of the Republican and the Democratic National Convention for years now, of low-income families, and it's pretty much an entire militarization of the police force. And, they've set up these crazy, free speech zones. The march I had in Minnesota, there was 80 reporters that were detained, including Amy Goodman. So we've got to go back to that day where we have, freedoms again.
This was at one of the party conventions, I recall. Is that right, where Amy Goodman was?
Yeah, it was at the last Republican National Convention that took place in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Uh-huh. Bob, what would you do about the Patriot Act and the clampdown on civil liberties? Bob Petraeus.
Well, I'll tell you what I did after they cracked down in Minneapolis. I flew in and marched the next day. And I was also pleased because a variety of us came and marched in. I wasn't pleased with the result. They let us march down, and then, they put us in that little bullpen, which it's like speaking from prison. I thought it was like my last words. So they had this little podium in the in this kind of metal jail prison bullpen area where they would let you go. So they were on better behavior the next day, but
who's that?
I think
the Minneapolis
the police. But the day before, I mean, they had brutalized, marchers, activists, and reporters, which is a very dangerous precedent. And in fact, the Free Press has a new video out called "Struggle," and you can see people, protesting against the Bush inauguration, both in 2000 and 2004, a lot of footage, and you can just watch the police brutalization of anyone that dared question the legitimacy. And I think at the same time, you have that, you know, you have National Defense Authorization Act, which is a tremendous problem. And again, the difference, you know, the Democrats like to be the reform party. So Obama will sign it and say, hi, we can put American citizens away in perpetuity, never let them out, but we don't intend to enforce this law. Well, you just sign the damn thing, and hey, there's really a chance you're not going to get reelected, buddy, because you do stupid stuff like that. Same thing with extraordinary rendition. So the Republicans will illegally kidnap you and torture you. The Democrats are principled. They allow rendition, you to be tortured, but they won't kidnap you. Their allies will, and they'll stand and take notes while you're being tortured. They won't do the torturing themselves.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of Barack Obama's pledge to leave the federal marijuana law intact and not enforce it in states where medical marijuana is legal. But as we know, they've been enforcing it with very serious commitment. Still having, I think actually more people were arrested for marijuana under Obama than were under George W. Bush. Two pot smokers turned into narcs. We are talking with Sherry Honkowa. She is the Green Party nominee for Vice President of the United States, running with Jill Stein, who was on our show last week, and Bob Petraeus, the Green Party candidate for Congress here in Central Ohio. Bob is my co-conspirator on the book, Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? Sherry, what do you think now about the electronic voting machines? Do you think you're going to get a fair vote count for the Green Party this year?
Well, we're going to try like hell to encourage people to go out to their polls, become poll watchers and participate in the process. But I was just in West Virginia yesterday, and I was really excited that there's some international human rights election monitors that will be monitoring the polls in West Virginia.
Really? Where are they from? Are they from the United Nations?
They were from Europe. They were with a particular organization, but not from the UN.
Bob, are you familiar with this group that is monitoring elections in West Virginia?
No, but I was familiar with the group who came to from the United Nations in 2004. I was in on the meeting as a former international observer. I co-wrote and was the editor of the International Observer's report in the first ever democratic election in El Salvador back in 94.
I thought you were going to say Ohio.
They were threatened with arrest. I mean, they were literally told. Matt Damschroeder, the man in charge of the Board of Elections in Franklin County, called up the Secretary of State, who told these distinguished UN election observers, included noted justices and magistrates from around the world, that if they attempted to observe and they came within 100 feet of any polling place, they would be arrested.
Now, is this Sherry Honkowa and Bob Petraeus, do we know what is the status this year of international observers for this election we're having upcoming? How do we know that the international observers will not be banned as they were in Ohio?
Well, that depends. It's state to state, and often it's county to county within the state. And every now and then a judge will be more liberal, a presiding judge who doesn't enforce the mandate, say, in Ohio. But I think we ought to defer to the words of Jimmy Carter, who is in charge of the Carter-Baker Commission, who said he does not observe American elections because they don't meet minimum standards of transparency.
Well, that's an interesting observation from someone who co-authored five books with me on election theft. We're getting Dana Lyons coming in here with the theme song. We're talking with Sherry Honkowa and Bob Petraeus of the Green Party, and we will be back with you after this break.
Well, should I hear you then as well I could stand? In their water rooftop
Show with Harvey Wasserman. That's me. Talking with Sherry Hankala, the Green Party nominee for Vice President of the United States, and Bob Patricus, congressional candidate for the Green Party here in Central Ohio. As we're leaving at the break, we started to talk about drug policy. I actually saw Jill Stein, the candidate for president from the Green Party, our guest last week on the show, on a major network. I can't remember which one it was, maybe MSNBC or CNN. She was on with Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate for president, who I noticed the GOP is trying to knock off the ballot wherever they can. And among the other things, among the things they talked about was drug policy and the laws against marijuana. Gary Johnson was being a libertarian and actually being a pretty active, outspoken proponent of legal marijuana, was very articulate, as was Jill Stein. Sherry, can you tell us the Green Party position on legalizing marijuana?
Well, we want to legalize marijuana, and we want to stop locking people up for the sales of it. I know that as a woman who's lived in poor communities all my life and traveled around the country, we are watching our young people who don't have access to employment go to jail. We're watching the ending of recovery programs in poor communities like in Kensington. We don't have a detox center anymore, so folks that are coming off of heroin are sick and just running around on the streets. And they recently ended general assistance that paid for 40,000 folks, many of whom were living in recovery programs. And so now those 40,000 have no place to go and are no longer getting help with whatever their possible addiction is. And then I've seen young people that I write to all across the country, particularly in California, that are doing serious sentences for petty little drug sales. And, you know, Jill, being a doctor, has always been a strong advocate of medical marijuana.
And Bob Patricus, as an attorney, what's your position on the drug laws?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, my position not only as an attorney but as a social scientist is that essentially they're racist and were deliberately brought forth. We tripled the amount of people in the prisons and in the jails during the Reagan era.
Is that since the beginning of the drug war, 1970?
Yeah, really, really, the turning point is Ronald Reagan. You know, he waged a war, on the drug of choice of the counterculture. But on the other hand, really, it's at the same time where we were outsourcing jobs. We were deliberately deindustrializing places like Cleveland and Detroit and the Rust Belt, you know, Allentown, made famous by Billy Joe. So, I mean, what do you do with people when you've decided that, you know, corporate capitalists are going to make a ton of money exploiting cheap labor? What you did is you had a war on drugs. And in many ways, it reminded me of the rise of fascism in Italy. One of the things that Mussolini said is that you have to have your police doing something in an authoritarian state. You need a kind of an unwinnable, endless war. And since marijuana grows like a weed, and since it was very popular among all segments of the population and is really the number one cash crop in the United States, that was the war. But in many cases, I think the war on drugs masked a far more brutal war against the poor people in Appalachia, and particularly the people in the central cities, the old urban so-called Rust Belts.
Sherry, were you a victim of this war on drugs? Have you been?
Well, I haven't, well, actually, yes, because, you know, everybody that I love and I know in the neighborhood, I mean, it's like a revolving door. You know, the kids are out on the corners. I live on Mutter Street in Kensington, which is the poorest area in Philadelphia, and I live in between two crack houses. So my 10-year-old little boy has to hear, fights throughout the night, and knows at 10 years old which way to walk and who to avoid and all of these kinds of things. And it's because our young people, they don't have employment, they don't have movie theaters, they don't have recreation, they can't afford to go to college. And the number one source of income in Kensington used to be welfare, and when welfare was no longer an entitlement and less jobs exist because they're, sending them all over the world, the situation has become much worse. And, it's just very normal to drive down the street and see a bunch of young people that are hogtied laying on the ground, and you know that they're, going away and they're not coming out, and they're going to begin a vicious cycle of, spending many years in jail just trying to, feed themselves and feed their families.
Bob, have you seen this kind of poverty in your career? You came from Detroit.
I lived in Detroit in the 1980s during the Reagan years. I lived in a political commune that attempted, like Sherry, to take houses that had been boarded up, foreclosed on because of the outsourcing of jobs and the deindustrialization of our factories. And we would onboard them and move people in. And the violence, really unimaginable. I was in Detroit back in 84 when there was an estimated 2,200 deliberate arsons on one night, Devil's Night, the night before Halloween. So to be there and, in the middle of Dante's New Inferno, you just kind of think, what had happened to this country? It was really unthinkable, and that is this mythology of what a great, great president, thanks to Fox News, that Reagan was. But in our neighborhood, in the inner city that had lost these jobs and was so devastated, everywhere you looked, I remember the election of 84, everywhere you looked, it would say Ronald Wilson Reagan, 666, mark of the beast. So he was not very popular in our area. And the poverty was just so massive, so desperate. She just, I remember talking to two students from China, and communist China had come here. They were in graduate school with me, and we'd take the bus together. And one day, one of them leaned over and just saw, people sleeping on the streets and, block after block of devastated, boarded-up businesses that weren't being reopened. And she said, "We used to think this was propaganda from the Communist Party."
Right. So, Sherry Hunkel, what is the Green Party going to do about all this? We have a new Green Deal, an end to the drug war. By the way, it's my theory that the drug war was started by Richard Nixon merely because he hated hippies and wanted to get as many of them arrested as possible. I mean, Bob, I guess the drug war took a big escalation when Ronald Reagan came in, but it was Richard Nixon that started it, right?
Oh, yeah, and the Paraquat, remember, he actually sprayed it with poison, and 12 people died the one year?
Uh-huh. It was kind of the Agent Orange of all this. So, Sherry Hunkel, as the vice presidential candidate of the Green Party of the United States, you talk about ending the empire and a Green New Deal, changing the drug policy, stopping the war on drugs, which is, by the way, the longest war that the United States have ever fought. A lot of people talk about Afghanistan, which were our current Democratic president has escalated, but it's really the drug war that's the longest war in American history. What is the Green Party going to do about all this?
Well, we're gonna legalize marijuana, and we're gonna stop locking up our young people across this country, and we're gonna make sure that people have a right to health care in this country, and that includes access to mental health care and a right to recovery. you know, the thing that neither of our, you know, President Obama or Romney have not at all touched, or nobody ever touches, is this drug war. And yet every single day across this country, people are dying from crack and heroin overdoses. And, you know, these are very real, and they're very large numbers, and not to mention the AIDS crisis. I mean, we've stopped talking about the AIDS crisis like it's gone or something.
Well, let's talk about for the minute. We haven't touched on the AIDS crisis, and you brought it up, so tell us what you're thinking.
Well, you know, I have a 10-year-old boy that has a father that has AIDS, and was, you know, is still a heroin addict. You know, when the times that he was locked up in prison, he got access to a recovery program, and he got access to medication for his AIDS. But whenever he would then get out of prison, there's no jobs, there's no housing, and you know, he's still going on a battle to try and get Social Security so that he's able to get access to his AIDS medication. And that's just one of thousands of sick people that you can see that are running around in the Philadelphia area that are sick, both mentally and physically. And they are just, you know, written off. And, you know, they're going through this in a neighborhood, like I said, that is totally like a wartime situation where people, even if they wanted to get well, there are no recovery programs anymore.
Bob Fetrakis, what do you got to say about that?
Oh, it's not only the problem with AIDS, but, you know, the various lack of health care. And the resistant diseases, you know, just a few years ago, we had a major outbreak here of tuberculosis in the homeless shelters that affected the workers as well as the people that were there. And I'm thinking, what sort of a country that's as rich as this is having tuberculosis outbreaks in its homeless shelter? So the notion of moving a lot of these people out, often people who aren't skilled at living in many areas, but giving them Section 8 vouchers and letting them go out and find their own housing is just a cruel and vicious policy. And, you know, we've got at least 2,400 people on the streets every night here. And at the same time, we have 6,000 houses, more than 6,000 foreclosed on houses from the bank that are literally rotting and bringing down property values. I believe if we acted logically, we'd find community groups, activist groups, faith-based groups, and actually move the homeless, and particularly homeless families. You know, we have whole shelters now in Columbus that cater to homeless families.
And there's such a money-making industry, too. Most people think that
homelessness is a money-making industry. Let's hear about that.
I mean, most people don't know that when you stay in the shelter, they get money. The shelter gets money for you staying in the shelter because you end up applying for public assistance, and then the money that you get from public assistance goes to pay for the shelter. So it's not like you're able to, you know, put some money together and figure out how to get out of the shelter. They've even come up with terms like you have to be housing ready to get out of a shelter. And I thought you were ready for housing when you were homeless. But now they've come up with a variety of different terms. And, you know, now you see people, you know, they're fighting for a bed in the shelter, and that doesn't guarantee a path towards getting a house. It just means that, you know, you're one of thousands of people that's in a fight in a lottery system to maybe get a bed if you're lucky. If not, you'll have to be on the floor on a mattress. And there are, in most areas of the country, there isn't family shelters. So families are split up. So the way to really deal with this is to end homelessness by putting families into houses and taking the bureaucrats out of it and stop giving the middleman some money and, you know, give people an opportunity to house themselves and access to employment so that they can feed, clothe, and house and take care of their own families.
Now, we're getting down to the end here. We only got 10 minutes left. We're talking with Sherry Hunkel, the Green Party candidate for Vice President of the United States, Bob Fitrakis, the Green Party candidate for Congress in Central Ohio. I'm sure you're asked, and I asked this of Jill Stein last week, the presidential candidate for President of the United States from the Green Party. And by the way, the Green Party will be having an event tonight in New York City. At the, I forget the name of the place. It's at 7
p.m. Sullivan.
The Sullivan House. There you go. I had to tell you at the beginning. Now you tell me. It's fair enough.
Yeah.
What we want to do now is ask you, Sherry Hunkel and Bob Fitrakis, obviously, it's been painfully obvious that Mitt Romney couldn't care less about any of this. We've been talking about homelessness and poverty. Born with a silver spoon up his whatever. Tell us, please, aren't you afraid, Sherry Hunkel, as being a spoiler and keeping Barack Obama out of the White House? What do you tell people when they ask you, isn't a vote wasted on the Green Party? And aren't you basically a vote for the Green Party is a vote for Mitt Romney? What do you got to say about that?
Well, you can't really spoil something that's absolutely rotten. And the majority of the people that I've traveled and met and spoke with across the country and have been doing for quite so many years now, they're not surviving under either Republicans or Democrats administrations. And it's time for us to vote courage and put forward this vision of a different kind of world because it's totally possible. And if we don't start now, our very planet is at stake.
All right, Bob Fitrakis, Green Party candidate for Congress in Central Ohio. Are you throwing away your vote by not voting for Barack Obama?
I think anytime you actually vote your real values, what you're doing is affirming your right to vote. You don't have to vote for, the lesser of two evils. You don't have to go out and vote for somebody you don't like because you're scared or loathe the other candidate. So, why would you vote for something you don't really want? The best you can do is get it. So, you complain about Barack Obama, you don't like what he's doing, and so you go out and vote for him because of the fear of Romney. The only way this system ever changes, Harvey, you've written a book on it, Harvey Wasserman's History of the United States, is real change comes from below. Real change comes from people with new ideas, comes from social movements, be it the Populist Party or the Socialist Party or the Progressive Party. Those are the movements that, brought the American people the weekend, brought Social Security. Anything we now accept and love was not brought by the two mainstream corporate parties, but was always brought by activism from below. And really, we're looking for the vast majority of people out there that don't vote or who feel they don't really want to vote and vote reluctantly. We're trying to offer them a different perspective. Look, we don't have to have 4% of the world's population, Harvey, and, spend more than half of all the money on planet Earth on the military. There's some people, and mostly in the Green Party, but many Americans that don't vote but can read a map. And we can tell there's two oceans on either side of us and a friendly Mexico and Canada, and that we don't need to be addicted to war. So, if Barack Obama's worried about losing votes to the Green, then maybe he could actually have some Green policies. If he's worried about losing votes to the peace communities, maybe he could bring the troops home now from Afghanistan and quit starting additional wars. and these illegal drone attacks, and then he wouldn't have to worry about the Green Party taking votes away from him, because he would be the candidate of peace. He would be the candidate of civil rights and civil liberties.
Sherry Hancock, can you add to that?
Yeah, I just think that after years of working in the anti-poverty movement for 25 years now, I've finally come to the realization that if your abuser keeps throwing you down the stairs, it's okay for you to leave him. And that's what I've done with the Democratic Party. That's what I'm encouraging poor and working people to do out there. We've invested a great deal of our time, you know, getting in buses and going to Washington, D.C. to beg our elected representatives to care about poverty and hunger and homelessness and domestic violence and the war on drugs. It hasn't happened because both of those parties continue to take money from corporations, and we're last on the totem pole if we even make it. And so I just want to say, you know, it's time to free ourselves and to get busy creating this new kind of world we want to live in.
All right. Sherry Hancock, the Green Party candidate for Vice President of the United States, Bob Fitrakis, the candidate for Congress here in Central Ohio, and co-author with me of Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? I want to make it clear that our concern with the Republicans stealing the election, which is very tangible, stems more from a fear for the death of our general democratic system than whether or not Barack Obama is going to be in the White House come 2013. Sherry Hancock, you are listed on your website here as being in a number of films: Takeover, Poverty Outlaw, Outriders, The Battle for Broad, Living Broke in Broke Times, August in the Empire State, Homeless Hero, The Philadelphia Story. These are all documentary films?
Yes, they are.
And are these made by your son? You have a son who's a filmmaker.
No. Skylight Pictures, Michael Moore, Bruce Springsteen, have all participated in different parts of my life in financing documentary films, in which pretty much the 25 years of my life, there's been different cameras around following and documenting the work that myself and thousands of other people have been engaged in, mostly through the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. So people should be encouraged to, you know, watch some of those documentaries, learn from some of the organizing models, learn from our mistakes, and get busy trying to make this a better place to live in.
All right. Sherry Hancock, the vice presidential candidate from the Green Party. Boy, this hour flew by once again. Honor to have you on the show. Bob Fitrakis, thank you. And we look forward to seeing you again. Bob Fitrakis, Green Party candidate for Congress and co-author with me of Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election? Thank you so much. Next week we'll have a special two-hour show on election protection. We will be in touch. Thank you and have a great week.
Will, we bit the apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost, and so we went digging into the ground.